We present Ian Carmichael as Lord Peter Wimsey in Murder Must Advertise by Dorothy L. Sayers, adapted for radio by Alistair Beaton, with Alan Cuthbertson as Chief Inspector Parker and Edward D'Souza as Mr. Tallboy. Episode 6. Appropriate Exit of an Unskilled Murderer.
Lord Peter Wimsey's investigations have led him to believe that a system of drug smuggling is being coordinated from an advertising agency called Pym's Publicity. One of the suspects in the case is spotted and followed, but dies under the wheels of an underground train in South Kensington Station. Lord Peter Wimsey suspects that a Dr. Garfield, who was on the scene at the time, is far from being an innocent spectator. Suddenly, all the threads of the case begin to come together.
Well, Peter, we've tracked down the poor fellow who got in the way of the train. Name of Mountjoy. Lived alone in a neat little bachelor flat. Seems to have been a gentleman of independent means, as the commissionaire put it. But who was he? What was he up to? Why did he have to be suppressed?
Well, it's pretty clear what he was up to. He was engaged in the dope traffic, and he was suppressed because he'd been fool enough to let our reporter friend Punchin recognize and follow him.
But where's the dope?
Oh, really, Charles. Mountjoy was going to fetch the dope. Haven't you yet grasped that he is part of the Milligan crowd and that Friday is their day for distributing the stuff? The Milligans get it on Friday and give house parties on Friday and Saturday nights when it goes into the hands of the actual addicts. It is rather surprising, though, that Garfield and co. left Mountjoy's flat alone. Are you quite sure there were no visitors on the day Mountjoy was killed?
Oh, yes, I checked that carefully with the servants. No one at all, apart from the post office man to bring the new telephone directories.
The what?
Telephone directories.
In the plural?
Yes, he brought two new volumes.
Charles, that is it!
What's what?
The fellow who brought the new volumes and took the old ones away. The man was obviously a charlatan. Since when, Charles, has the post office taken to get in both volumes of the London directory out at once?
By Jove!
And ring up now and find out when the post office last changed the telephone directories in Mountjoy's area.
Well, Peter, the area where Mountjoy lives received their new L to Z volume a fortnight ago. The new A to K volume isn't due to be issued yet.
Then that settles it. Our friend Mountjoy kept his secrets in the telephone directories. That's why the gang wanted them to remove the evidence. Now then, where do all good telephone directories go when they die?
The pulping mills, probably.
And the last legitimate post office exchange of the L to Z volumes was made a fortnight ago. Do you know there is a chance that it hasn't been pulped yet? Get on to it, Charles, get on to it. There is also a chance that it was marked.
You may be right. It's a chance, as you say. Oh, that's about 500 telephone directories we've checked now, Peter. And there still isn't one that looks in any way of use to us.
Now, wait a moment, Charles, wait a moment, wait a moment. Do you know, I think this is the one.
What is it?
Look. A whole list of public houses in central London have been ticked off. Three in the middle L's, two near the end of the M's, one in the N's, one in the O's, and two in the middle of the W's. The two in the W's are the White Stag in Wapping and the White Stoat off Oxford Street. The next W after that, Charles, is the White Swan in Covent Garden. I would bet any money that in the new L to Z volume that was carried away by that charlatan Johnny, remember, the White Swan was duly ticked off in turn.
The White Swan in Covent Garden, where we first came across Mountjoy.
Exactly. Now, I am making rather a long cast, but I suggest this. The stuff comes up to London on a Thursday. It is taken to whichever pub stands next on the list in the directory. 1 week it will be a pub with a name in A, say, Anchor. Next week it will be a B, the Bull and Dog or the Bricklayer's Arms. The week after that it will be a C, and so on to W, X, Y, Z, if there are any. The people who have to call for their dope wander into the pub indicated, where it is slipped to them by the head distributor and his agents, probably quite without the knowledge of the proprietor. And since it never comes twice to the same place, your pretty policeman can go and talk to the customers in the White Swan till they are blue in the face.
Parker here? Yes? Where? Right. Don't touch anything till I get there. Peter, it's Diane de Momeray.
What's the matter with her?
She's dead. Found with her throat cut.
Oh, dear God.
You know, what I don't understand, Miss Meteyard, is where Mr. Tallboy gets all his money. I mean, I still can't think where that £50 in the envelope came from.
Perhaps he did rather well with his stockbrokers. You know, the famous firm of Smith, 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 Smith and Smith Unlimited.
I don't know what the directors would think if they knew about him and his £50.
Directors are the last people to hear anything about the staff. Which reminds me, I wonder how much the directors know about our Mr. Breeden.
Do you mean, Miss Meteyard?
Well, you know, there are a few things about Mr. Breeden that don't add up. And what's more, I've begun to realise he bears an uncanny resemblance to someone whose photograph was all over the papers a few years back. Oh, in connection with some ghastly murder or something. Now, where's that copy of Who's Who? Oh, yes, got it.
I hardly think you're going to find Mr. Breeden in the pages of Who's Who.
I'm not so sure. Let's see, what was the name? Whimsy. Yes, W-W. Now listen to this. Whimsy. Peter Death Breeden. Lord, DSO, born 1890.
Good heavens!
Second son of Mortimer Gerald Breeden Whimsy, 15th Duke of Denver, and Honoria Lucasta, daughter of Francis Delgardy of Bellingham Manor Bucks. Education, Eton College and Balliol.
Oh, dear, Miss Meteyard. What are we going to do?
I think the best thing we can do is leave well alone. Let's keep this strictly to ourselves for the time being, Miss Rossiter.
Morning, Charles.
Hello, Peter. Where have you been?
I have news for thee, old Parker Bird. I have just paid a call on Tallboy's stockbroker.
What's his stockbroker to do with it?
Well, I caught the name and address on an envelope Tallboy was scribbling in the office one day. A chap by the name of Smith said he was his stockbroker. Well, I tootled along there this morning. Not a stockbroker in sight. It's the address of a grubby little tobacconist. What's more, his name ain't Smith either. It is Cummins.
Really?
Yes. But he comes. He keeps getting letters addressed to Smith, which he invariably sends back.
Well, we must get on to the return letter office immediately.
I already have been there.
Oh.
And they told me there that a letter addressed to Smith goes to Cummins' place every week, which he immediately returns. They open it at the post office, of course, but are unable to return them to the sender.
Why?
All the letters ever contain is a blank sheet of paper.
I see.
They've agreed to keep the next letter and let me have it. All the others have been destroyed.
Does this mean that Tallboy is the one we're after?
Frankly, Charles, I do not understand it. I can't see him as the big bug in all this business. If he were, his money wouldn't be coming to him in £50 instalments. But there is a connection, you know, there must be.
Possibly he's only a small item in the account.
Well, possibly. But I cannot get over something that Milligan once said to me. According to his information, the whole show is run from Pimm's.
Yes, but how and why? What's advertising got to do with it? Murder doesn't want to advertise. Far from it.
I don't know, Charles. I do not know. Yet. But I've been working on this thing. You got a diary, Charles?
Yes, here.
Yeah, thank you. Now then. Now, you see this date?
Yes.
That is the Tuesday before the Friday on which drugs were being served out at the White Swan. Now, on that Tuesday, Tallboy passed the New Tracks headline for publication the following Friday. And what was the headline? It was Why Blame the Woman. You will note, Charles, that it begins with a W. White Swan also begins with a W. Got that?
Yes, of course I got that, Peter, but I don't see the connection.
Now, Charles, all right. All the New Tracks advertisements are passed for press on a Tuesday and appear on a Friday.
Right.
Fine. Now, perpend, Charles. Mr. Tallboy, who you may recall is group manager for the New Tracks account, has a habit of sending letters on a Tuesday addressed to a Mr. Smith, who, may I remind you, does not appear to exist. Now, the point is that Mr. Smith ain't always the same Mr. Smith. But on the day that the New Tracks headline began with a T, Mr. Smith was a Mr. T. Smith.
And what sort of Mr. Smith was he on the day that the New Tracks headline began with a W?
Unfortunately, I don't know, but I can guess that it was a Mr. W. Smith.
I think you want a little more evidence on that point. You don't seem to have any instance where you can point to the initial, the headline, and the pub all together.
That is the weak point. But now look here. This Tuesday is the date on which the great new tracks row occurred.
Mm-hmm.
And the headline was altered at the last moment on Thursday night. Do you remember that?
Yes.
Now, on the Friday of that week, something went wrong with the supply of dope to Milligan. It never turned up.
Peter, I do believe you've got hold of something.
Do you, Charles? Well, so do I, but I wasn't sure if it would sound plausible to anybody but me.
But how's it worked, Peter?
Well, I don't know the details, but I imagine it's done this way. On the Tuesday, as soon as the headline's decided, Tallboy sends an envelope to the shop addressed to A. Smith or B. Smith Esquire, according to the initial of the headline. Tallboy's so-called stockbroker looks at it, snorts, and hands it back to the postman. Then he informs the head distributing agent or agents what the code letter is. The stuff is run across on Thursday, and the agent meets it. Then he gets the London telephone directory and looks up the next pub on the list whose name begins with the letter which our stockbroker friend has told him. As soon as the pub opens on Friday morning, he's there. The retail agents, if we can call them so, have meanwhile consulted the Morning Gazette and the telephone directory. They hasten to the pub, and the packets are passed to them. Now, the ingenuity of the thing, Charles, is that the stuff is never distributed twice from the same place.
No wonder I had difficulties.
Yes, and no wonder they're prepared to go to such lengths to protect the system.
You'd better stay away from the office from now on, Peter. Remember Diane. It's getting much too dangerous.
I'm afraid I've got to play in a cricket match tomorrow afternoon, Charles. Pimms versus Brotherhoods. One of their clients, don't you know?
Oh, cricket match be damned. I don't know, though. It's nice and public. Provided the fast bowler doesn't knock you out with the swift ball, it may be as safe as anywhere else. Oh, well run, sir. Mr. Tallboy, why on earth did you send this man in ninth? He's a cricketer. He's the only cricketer among the whole damn lot of you.
Well, Mr. Brotherhood, he's a new member of staff, name of Breeden. Uh-huh. He's a public school man, and he said he'd done a good deal of country house cricket, but I had no idea he could play like this.
Oh, good God, one more and Pimms will have won.
Ah!
Mr. Brotherhood, I've never seen anything like it.
Haven't you? Oh, well, now, I've been watching cricket, man and boy, for 60 years, and I've seen something very like it. Let me see. Before the war, that would be the Varsity match of 1911. No, 1910. Tallboy, what did you say that fellow's name was?
Breeden.
Beautifully played, sir. Beautifully
played. Well done, Breeden. Well, thank you. You won the game.
Wait a minute. Pardon me. The name's just come to the recollection. Aren't you Whimsy of Balliol?
What?
Didn't I see you play for Oxford in 1911? Peter Whimsy of Balliol. Lord Peter Whimsy. Yes, that's it.
Whimsy?
Yes.
Did you say Whimsy?
Yes.
But I thought your name was Breeden.
It is, Mr. Tallboy. Breeden is my name.
Nonsense, Whimsy. I remember you distinctly.
Excuse me, would you? Do you mind? A mustache. Good evening, Mr. Tallboy. I think you'd better come in. You're looking rather rotten.
Thank you.
Perhaps you'd like a spot of something. Sit down, lad. Sit down. There. Drink that. Better?
Yes. I'm sorry to have made a fool of myself, Breeden. Lord Peter, I came to you...
You came to me to find out how much I knew.
Yes. No. I came because I couldn't stick it out any longer. I came to tell you all about it.
Well, now, wait a minute. There's something that I must tell you first. It's all out of my hands now, you understand. As a matter of fact, I don't think there's very much you can tell me. The game's up, old man. I'm sorry. I really am sorry, because I think you've been having a perfectly bloody time. But there it is. Have another drink.
Yeah, thank you. Well, I'm rather glad in a way. Oh, thank you. If it wasn't for my wife and the kid... Oh, God, I've been a bloody fool.
Most of us are at one time or another. I'm damn sorry, old chap.
I'd like to tell you... I realize that it's all up now, but... I think you might understand. I say, what put you under this?
That letter of Victor Dean's. Do you remember it? The one he threatened to write to Pym. He showed it to you, I fancy.
The little swine. Yes, he did. Didn't he destroy it?
No, he didn't.
I see. It all started about 2 years ago. I was rather hard up and I wanted to get married. I'd been losing money on horses as well and things were not too good. I met a man at a restaurant. I happened to mention where I was working. He seemed to be thinking a bit after that. And then he asked a good many questions about how advertisements were put together and sent to the papers and so on, and whether I was in a position to know beforehand what the headlines were going to be. So I said, of course, there were some accounts that I knew all about, such as New Tracks. Then he suddenly asked me if I could do with an extra $1,000 a year, and I said, couldn't I? Lead me to it. He said, if I would let him know every Tuesday the initial letter of the New Tracks headline for the following Friday, I should be well paid for it. So I said I'd do it, and we fixed up a code.
Yes, I know all about that. It was very ingenious and simple. The letters to Smith.
I was damned hard up, so I buzzed off the first two code letters, and at the end of the fortnight, I got my £50. I was heavily in debt, and I used it. After that, well, I hadn't the courage to chuck it.
No, it'd be rather hard, I should think.
Hard? You don't know, Breeden. Whimsy, I'm sorry. You don't know what it means to be stuck for money. So... I went on. And then somehow that little devil Dean got hold of it. He started to put the screw on. First of all, he wanted to go 50-50, and then he demanded more. My wife was having a baby. I needed the money. And then one day I felt I couldn't stand it any longer. I told Dean I was chucking the whole show, and he could do as he damn well pleased. And then he informed me that he was going to get his shot in first, and showed me the letter he was sending to Pym. That finished me, and I... begged him to hold off for a week or two while I thought things over. What happened about that letter exactly?
His sister found it amongst his things and sent it on to Pym. And he engaged me, through a friend, to inquire into it.
Ah.
Perhaps I had better tell you the next bit. You thought it over and decided that Victor Dean was a wart and a scab, and would be no great loss to the world. Well, one day you heard that Ginger Joe had had his catapult confiscated. You realized how easily a man could be plugged through the skylight as he went down the iron staircase. If the blow didn't kill him, then the fall might, and it would be, well, worth trying.
You really do know all about it, then?
I'm afraid so. Well, then the day came for putting Dean away. A nice, bright day when all the skylights were open. Then you went up onto the roof with the catapult. Oh, yes, and the scarab. It was a very good idea to use the scarab, because if anybody found it, they would naturally think it had tumbled out of his pocket as he fell.
I'd seen the scarab on Dean's desk after lunch. I knew he often kept it there. I rang up Dean on my telephone and said I was speaking for Mr. Hankin from the big conference room, and would Mr. Dean please come down about the Crunchlet's copy and bring the Times Atlas with him from my room. While he went for it, I pinched the scarab and slipped up onto the roof. I was pretty sure he'd go by the iron staircase, because that was the nearest way from my room to the conference room. Anyway, he came along all right, and I shot at him through the skylight when he was about 4 steps down the staircase. I stayed up on the roof till the fuss was over, and then came down quietly by the stairs. I didn't meet a soul, of course. They were all holding post-mortems and hanging round the corpse. When I knew I'd succeeded, I didn't care. I was glad. And I tell you this, if I hadn't been found out, I shouldn't care now.
I can sympathize with that.
They asked me for a shilling for the little beast's wreath. I'd gladly have given him 20 shillings or 20 pounds even. And then you came along. I didn't suspect anything till you started to talk about catapults. And then I got badly frightened and... Well, I'm afraid I tried to do away with you.
Yes, well, we'll draw a veil over that. You must have got a bit of a shock when you found you'd slugged the wrong man.
Yes, I did.
Well, I suppose that was when you shone a torch or stuck a light or something and saw Pamela Dean's letter.
Yes, I knew her writing. I'd seen it in Dean's room, and I knew her writing paper, too.
Ah.
Willis had told me that you and Pamela Dean were thick as thieves. I thought the letter might be telling you all about Dean and me. I didn't know quite what I thought, to tell you the truth. Then, when I found out my mistake, I got frightened and thought I'd better not try again.
I was expecting you. When nothing came of it, I began to think it hadn't been you at all. It was somebody else.
Did you know by then that the other thing was me?
I didn't know it was you. You were one of several possibilities. But after the new tracks row and the £50 in notes...
You know, I was horribly careless and incompetent all through. Those letters, I ought never to have sent them from the office.
No, you oughtn't. And the catapult. You should have taken the trouble to make your own, you know. A catapult without fingerprints is something very unusual.
Ah, so that was it. I'm afraid I've made an awful mess of everything. I couldn't even do a simple murder. Whimsy, how much longer is it going to hang on? I've been in torment. I've been trying to give myself up, but I... Well, my wife... Why haven't I been arrested before this?
They've been waiting. You see, tall boy, you aren't really as important as this dope gang. Once you were arrested, they would stop their little game, and we didn't want them to stop. I'm afraid you're the tethered kid, old lad, left there to trap the tigers.
When? When?
Tonight.
Whimsy, you've been frightfully decent to me. Tell me, is there any way out? It isn't myself exactly, but my wife and the kids. Pointed at all their lives. It's damnable. You couldn't give me 24 hours.
You wouldn't pass the ports.
If I were alone, I'd give myself up. I would, honestly.
There is an alternative.
I know. I've thought about that. I suppose that's the public school way out of it. Yes, all right. They'll hardly make a headline of it, though, will they? Suicide of old Dumbletonian wouldn't have much news value. Never mind, damn it. We'll show them that Dumbledon can achieve the Eton touch. Why not?
Good man. Have another drink. I think there is one other way out.
What?
It won't help you, but it may make all the difference to your wife and family.
How?
They need never know anything about all this. Nothing. Nobody need ever know anything. If you do as I tell you.
My God, Whimsy, what do you mean? Tell me quickly, I'll do anything.
It won't save you.
Oh, that doesn't matter, tell me.
If you go to the window, you will observe a man waiting outside in the shadows.
Yes?
He must have followed you here. You'll have had his instructions. Go home now. Go on foot, not too fast. And don't look behind you.
I understand. Very well.
Quickly, then.
Good night, and good luck.
Thank you, tall boy. Good night. Hello?
Peter, bag the whole crew. We let the other stuff go up to town. What do you think it went as? Traveller's samples. One of those closed cars with blinds all round.
That's where they made it into packets, then.
Yes. We watched our man into the Stag. Then we pulled in the motorboat and the car. Then we kept our eye on the pub and let the birds hop out into our arms one after another. It went off beautifully. No hitch at all.
Oh, good.
Oh, and by the way, their code word. We ought to have thought of that. It was just anything to do with new tracks. Some of them had the Morning Gazette showing the ad, and some of them just mentioned new tracks for nerves. One chap had a bottle of the stuff in his pocket. Another had it written on a shopping list, and so on.
Well, that explains Hector Punchin.
Oh, Hector, the newspaper fellow. Yes, he must have had his copy of the Morning Gazette with him. Oh, we've got the mythical Mr. Smith, too, of course. He turns out to be the actual top dog of the whole show. And as soon as we collared him, he coughed up the whole story, mangy little blighter. Oh, that doctor fellow who shoved Mountjoy under the train is in it, too. We've got definite information about him.
Lovely. Simply lovely.
What's the matter? You sound a bit peeved. Hang on a minute until I've cleared up here, and we'll go somewhere to celebrate.
Not tonight, Charles, if you don't mind. I don't feel quite like celebrating tonight, I'm afraid.
Will you have a cup of coffee, Mr. Breeden? I mean, Lord Peter.
Oh, yes, rather. Thank you, Miss Rossiter.
By the way, you heard about poor Mr. Tallboy.
Yes, poor chap.
Knocked down and killed on his way home.
Yes, we were all shocked, weren't we, Miss Meteyard? Mm. And poor Mrs. Tallboy with a small baby. It does seem awful.
Yes, I know.
Oh, that reminds me. While you're here, could I have your contribution for the wreath? At least, I suppose you'll be leaving Pym's now, but I thought you might like to contribute.
Yes, of course. Here you are.
Thank you. Oh, and there's also Mr. Willis's wedding present. You know he's getting married.
No, I didn't. Everything seems to happen while I'm away. Who's he marrying?
Pamela Dean.
Oh, good work. How much for Willis, Miss Rossiter?
Well, most people are giving about 2 bob.
Hanky and Garrett stumped up 50 quid each.
Then I'd better make it 50 quid too.
Oh, no, you're a lamb, but it isn't fair.
It is quite fair, Miss Rossiter. There are excellent reasons why I should contribute largely to a wedding present for Mr. Willis.
Oh, thank you. Are there? I thought you and he didn't get on very well. Oh, I forgot. I am a fool. Of course. If you're Lord Peter Wimsey, you're simply frightfully rich, aren't you?
Fair to middling. It might run to a cake for tea.
In that episode of Murder Must Advertise, the parts were played as follows. Lord Peter Wimsey, Ian Carmichael. Chief Inspector Parker, Alan Cuthbertson. Mr. Tallboy, Edward D'Souza. Miss Meachyard, Frances Jeter. Miss Rossiter, Joanna Wake. Mr. Brotherhood, Norman Shelley. Murder Must Advertise was adapted by Alistair Beaton from the book by Dorothy L. Sayers. The programme was produced by Martin Fisher.